Hello and welcome to the first series of King's Talks. From ancient poems like Homer's Odyssey to contemporary work, including Insta-poetry, poetry has always been present, influential and powerful in society. Here to discuss poetry with me further is Matt Abbott, poet, educator and activist from Wakefield, and Kerry Marshall, curriculum leader of English at the King's School. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hello.
To start off, Matt, would you outline how poetry has recently risen to political prominence?
Yeah, sure. So at the start of this year, Amanda Gorman performed her poem, The Hill We Climb, at Joe Biden's inauguration, the presidential inauguration over in the US, and became a global superstar overnight. Millions and millions of people saw that performance of the poem. She's become the first poet ever to top USA Today's best-selling books list since the list started in 1992. All of her books are like bestsellers on all of the book sites. And she then went on to perform the poem at the Super Bowl as well. So obviously this is only one example, but like a poem at the president's inauguration is an indication of how poetry is now commonplace. All of the recent major political protests, there's been a lot of poetry. So a lot of the Black Lives Matters protests, poets would spontaneously pop up. It's not like it's a programmed event. Poets would just pop up and start reading. A lot of the March for Women events recently on International Women's Day, there have been poets on the main stage at Trafalgar Square. All of the political rallies I've been to over the last 10 or 15 years, in and amongst the speakers, there's always been a poet. But it seems now, as the younger generations are getting into poetry as well, there's a new wave of it. And I think Amanda Gorman is sort of like the queen of this new wave, which is really exciting to see. And I think that what's most important about poetry is how accessible it is in terms of being able to write it and perform it. So like, for example, if you wanted to get up and perform a song, but you don't know how to play guitar and you don't have a guitar and you can't read or write music, then that's instantly a barrier. Whereas with poetry, you don't even need to be able to read and write. You just need to be able to speak. So like somebody could write about a political issue and perform that poem several hours later at a protest. You know, it's really, really instant. And also when you're listening to it, if you're at the protest and you're listening to it, like verbal communication is the most basic form of communication. So you're instantly going to connect with what that person's saying. An example would be like Bob Dylan performed at Martin Luther King's really famous I Have a Dream speech. But a lot of people don't like Bob Dylan's singing voice, and a lot of people don't like his guitar. So you might not listen to the lyrics in his songs because of those things. Whereas with poetry, none of those things exist. So like, it's really important for people to be able to write and perform poetry, and people from all walks of life as well. Like anybody can do it. You don't need to have a degree. You don't need to have spent years training. You don't need to have any kind of previous skills. You can just perform. You can just get up and speak and say your piece. So that's why it's so important in politics, because, for example, at the Black Lives Matter protests, a lot of people might feel that they don't have a voice elsewhere, like they're not given prominent media platforms, they're not, you know, they're not in powers of position in society, but they feel like they have a voice by performing poetry at these protests, and that's what a lot of these protests are all about, I think. So it's incredibly important now, and I'm really enjoying seeing that.
Yeah, and I think like across the board, when you see these massively important political things, you know, on this global platform, it's all of the acts, isn't it? So whether you've got local artists doing graffiti, whether you've got local poets kind of putting in their piece, I think it sends the message to maybe the generation that definitely need to be hit to make that change. And I guess when I think about it as a young, well, I'm not young maybe anymore, but being a young working class lass from Barnsley, it excites me because I think it is different. It's different from me being in school in, you know, 2004 when I was in year 11, and you look on the news and it's so accessible via art, via poetry, via kind of just getting this rousing kind of united set of young people together to make a difference. And then it starts to get you thinking, well, what could be possible? And a lot of my young students that I see day to day, like, they're really excited about this kind of stuff, and that's exactly what it should be like. Is there something, yeah, is there something beyond the accessibility of writing poetry? Is there something more to it than that, that you think has made it such a powerful voice on the global and political stage?
Yeah, I think there's two things. First of all, a lot of political issues nowadays are obviously very, very complex and very, very nuanced. And to properly read into it and research it might take a lot of time and might feel a little bit overwhelming. And also, things can be so bogged down in like terminology, and it might be presented a certain way by a certain newspaper. And it's really difficult to cut to the heart of it and find out what the actual real life issue is. And poetry can do that. Like, poetry is a human being telling you about their experience. It's not a media outlet framing it. It's, there's no political agenda. That's just a person saying, this is what I've experienced, this is what I think. And sort of linking to that, I think on social media, there's content overload. Like, it's just, there's so much stuff, whether it's news content or other people speaking, it's just a constant stream of videos and sensationalist, knee-jerk, binary stuff. And I think poetry is a way of sort of finding a bit of solace and actually, you know, experiencing it properly rather than just knee-jerk reactions. So I think, like I say, one, it condenses it in a human way, and two, it gives you like really good quality insight rather than just, I was going to say tweets, but I know a lot of young people are on TikTok, Instagram, whatever, but it's all the same thing. So I think that's why it's so important, because it's real insight and it's real, like, considered, crafted words in and amongst all of the fake news and stuff like that.
How does that sense of reality link to what you were just saying about how it resonates with the working class, that sense of reality and simplicity and heartfelt, almost vulnerability?
Yeah. I think it maybe comes down to, I mean, you know, making it about myself a little bit, an accessibility thing. And there's probably still students that have got that mindset. I think it could still be even more accessible. But you look back to, well, my upbringing, and poetry wasn't something that would have been discussed in my household. Certainly, you know, we had books and I was an avid reader, but until I got to kind of year 10, 11, and you have to do your poetry anthology, I didn't really know certain things existed. And reading things like Ted Hughes, reading Simon Armitage, and thinking, oh, they're just from up the road. And I understand what they're saying. And I think you maybe need an in. If someone had have delivered me up some 18th century Alexander Pope at that age, I think I would have had the attitude of, oh gosh, it's posh, it's fancy, it's not for me. But then reading some of the stuff in my GCSE anthology that was relatable by someone who, you know, grew up in a similar situation to me, I think you start to explore and you start to look into kind of your identity within it. And I don't know if that links a little bit to even the music element. So, you know, as an English teacher, I obviously love books, I love reading, I particularly love poetry, but I often wondered, where did that start? And I think maybe it's really as early as like nursery rhyme books. And then following on from that, you know, everyone thinks of their favorite album and used to get excited and get the like insert out of the back and follow all of the lyrics and listen with your Walkman or whatever device you might be old or young enough to use. And I think that's the starting point, but you need an in, you need something that resonates with you, makes sense in your world. And relating that back to the political context now, that is our world. The Black Lives Matter is our world. Whatever's going on, you know, both in the UK, globally, pandemic-wise at the moment, it's about processing and using that creative outlet or understanding someone else's use of that creative outlet to make sense of your world and the world in general, I feel.
So I like what you're saying about the overlap and the interactivity between all these elements that we experience day to day on so many different levels. And I'd like to explore just for a moment more about that fluidity, I suppose, that movement between poetry and music. Where do you see that? Why do you think there's such an overlap?
do we go too far when we try and separate these things into into completely divided skills?
I think that with certain artists, there's definitely a huge, huge overlap. So Leonard Cohen, for example, he started off doing poetry at open mic nights, and people said, you should set your poetry to music. You might get a bit further. And he was reluctant because he was like, I can't sing. And then he went on to have decades and decades as one of the biggest musical artists in the world. Alex Turner, as a more recent example, was hugely influenced by poetry. He has a tattoo with Dr. John Cooper Clarke's name on his arm. John Cooper Clarke's a poet. He was hugely influenced by poetry when he started writing the lyrics for Arctic Monkeys. And loads of other, David Bowie, for example. There's loads of prominent lyricists. I should also say, Patti Smith, Joni Mitchell. There are lots of lyricists who are very influenced by poetry. Obviously, some songs, you couldn't say that the lyrics are poetry. Some pop songs, it's not the same thing. But to deny that there's an overlap would be wrong. And I think for me, and I think for everybody here, music, we were obsessed with lyrics before poetry and then joined the dots afterwards, I think, yeah. Without realising.
At this school, we used to do a scheme called Music and Lyrics, actually. And it's interesting because sometimes we'd have examples of what we would classify as poetry, published works, etc. And I remember one particular lesson, I had a song by like a post-hardcore punk band called Alexis on Fire, which you either love them or hate them. And I remember having the lyrics to this particular song, and I printed it out just as a poem and didn't tell them anything else other than, right, here you go, we're going to analyse this. And they're looking through, they're picking out all the devices, they're looking at the hidden meaning, the depth, what does it mean to them? A lot of them saying, oh, yeah, I get this, miss. I really like this poem. Who's the poet? And then in the end, there's kind of the big reveal, and I pressed play on this YouTube video, making sure I paused it at certain points because it was probably a bit explicit in places, but they couldn't believe that it was almost this screamer metal song. And that kind of brought about a really nice conversation, what does constitute as poetry? Where does that line stop? Who are you to say that is not poetry? When we've just done a whole kind of lesson of analysis on it, which I find really interesting. And I think that opened up their eyes a little bit and made them go home and think about, well, what do I listen to? What do I think? And this idea of, a certain artist, almost like urban poets in some senses, and you have Grimes being pretty big, hasn't it, the last few years? And I think that's another exciting layer, that's another in to that world of students to think, right, well, this is actually something really beautiful, it's sending a really important message, and I can be a part of that, whether it's reading the lyrics online, whether it's writing their own, or just seeing it on a bit of a kind of deeper level.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on that idea of, well, who's to say it's not poetry? And that idea of the ways that we grow up defining poetry, perhaps. I mean, I doubt I'm the only one who grew up thinking that it has to have a rhythm, it has to have a strict rhyme scheme, it should always be in four-line stanzas, and that was before I left primary school. So how, especially in the times that we've lived through in the last year or so, this use of poetry for self-expression, throw the rule book out the window, how have you seen that opening people up, especially in these times that have been so difficult for so many?
I know that I'm
I think
oh sorry
I just think that people feel the need to express themselves a lot quicker. And I feel like maybe poetry now, because it's so prominent, is feeling like the obvious choice, whereas it wasn't before. And I feel like that because there's a lot of poetry on Instagram, I think there is some poetry on TikTok. Obviously, there's loads of poetry on YouTube. People are just turning to poetry. A lot of people write poetry in private, particularly as teenagers. They write poetry without telling anybody. Poetry is like the new Dear Diary sort of thing, which sounds a bit weird, but I think it is. And I guess in terms of drawing the lines, like if a real good quality lyricist might reject the idea that they're a poet, and a lot of poets would reject the idea that any lyricist is a poet. But I guess if it's a well-crafted story, if you respond to a well-crafted lyric in exactly the same way you would a poem, it's just set to music. And just to touch on that, there was a collective of poets in New York in the 60s and 70s called The Last Poets, who were hugely influential in the US, and they are considered to be like to lay the foundations for hip-hop. And obviously Gil Scott-Heron as well was really prominent, and he sort of blended poetry and music. So like the links are obviously there, but I just think for mental well-being, like people feel very isolated and poetry can give you that connection. And I think with all kinds of art, you want some kind of familiarity. With music, you maybe have to listen to an album 10 or 15 times before you get that familiarity. With poetry, you can get familiarity straight away, like on first listen. And I think that's why it's so powerful.
Yeah, I always keep relating it to obviously the students, because I'm here on this representing why it's so important to the people that sit in front of me every day. And this idea of catharsis and that emotional release, and like you've just alluded to, whether you listen to a song and it can bring you to tears, or whether you've got an album that you know you put on when you're in a certain mood. I think that transference to then how that can work in their own writing is something that's been really useful throughout this last year and throughout COVID, throughout this pandemic. And so one of the things that we've done with some of our year 11 classes is, right, you know what, you might have never put pen to paper in terms of getting your thoughts and feelings about these confusing things, these things that you're frustrated with, the fact that you're feeling quite isolated, and all the other emotions that have been brought to the fore. And some of them are really hesitant, and you can tell the ones that really out of their comfort zone, because it is that idea, like you said, of that secret dear diary, and it's something so personal, and it's something, there's a vulnerability to it. You know how you'd feel if someone found my diaries from 2004. I mean, maybe I should make a comedy podcast on some of those, but when they actually gave it the time that I think it actually deserves and put their thoughts onto paper, the amount that then shared it with the rest of the class, and the actual quality, the realness, and the amount of them, and maybe I'm stereotyping here, but especially the boys that absolutely ran with it and enjoyed it and got exactly what I would hope they'd get out of it, was actually pretty emotional anyway in general. And what we've done collectively as a class, we've put all of them together, tried to give it a little bit of an order, and some of them are funny, some of them are desperately sad, some of them, you know, where people have lost members of their family, but collectively it's something that we're all really, really proud of. And I think to look back on this time and almost have that that diary, that documentation of where their head was at that particular point, I'm really proud of them, and it's something that's really quite special.
I've really enjoyed over the years Simon Armitage and the way that he brings his collections together, because I think it's one thing almost to write for your personal expression, which is incredibly important and can be so helpful, but for someone to make a living out of it sounds a bit crass, but for someone to do it and to sustain it as a career, I've found it fascinating the way that he takes a topic. I like his idea of the matchbox poems, where you can read each poem in the length of time it takes a match to burn. And that is wonderful. I love the creativity that goes in with that. And so, you know, to have poetry at your fingertips, and it can be something that you can turn to in a moment of crisis, a moment where you just need to get this overflow of emotions on the page, like you just said, Matt, that instantaneous expression, but also to have fun with it and to be creative with it. It's such a flexible thing to have at our fingertips. Matt, I just want to ask you, you're an activist. Have there been topics that you feel your poetry has really enabled you to kind of voice concerns and frustrations and challenges in a way that perhaps blogging or any other kind of communication hasn't been able to, or wouldn't have been able to express?
Good question. I think what I always love to do as a poet is to present a narrative that might not be expected and that might not be very prominent. So as a working class lad from Wakefield, I'm in quite a unique position as somebody who's also a professional poet. Like, it's not what you'd expect. And so I speak a lot about my heritage and coming from Wakefield, and my dad and my granddad were coal miners. And so I've seen firsthand, like, the social and political impact of, for example, a lot of industries like that closing down. And I try to speak about those issues, and I try to highlight some of those issues to an audience that wouldn't necessarily be aware of it. And I try to use poetry as a way of changing people's perceptions, and opening windows that people never would have looked through before. Now, obviously, it's important to say that, you know, I'm a heterosexual white man, so I have a lot of privilege. So, like, I can only really speak on behalf of my own experiences, but I love to use poetry partly to explore my heritage, but just also to highlight a lot of the social and political issues in the country at the moment. And I use my poetry as my main form of activism, much as I do, you know, canvassing and I get involved in politics in the traditional way. I just think that it's so important that certain issues are documented from a human perspective. A lot of politicians will only talk about statistics and policies, and numbers and facts, whereas a poet's job is to do precisely the opposite. So I try and use poetry to highlight certain things in a way that people might hear once and go, oh, actually, I see what you mean, whereas they might not listen to a 25-minute speech or read a 2,000-word essay, if you know what I mean. So for me, it's enabled me to explore my heritage and explore certain issues. But also, I hope it's been useful in terms of maybe highlighting those issues and getting other people involved. I sort of use it to get other people switched on to those issues, if that makes sense. And it's really important for me to speak about Wakefield and things that have affected Wakefield and people in Yorkshire and working class communities further afield, because I feel like those voices are still underrepresented in poetry in general and in literature in general.
So, Carey, if a student, or anyone for that matter, is sat there thinking, this might be something I'd like to have a go at, where would you recommend people start?
I think it's probably where as an individual, as a teacher, all of us, you know, sat here right now would have started. Try and get something that you're into, that you're interested in, and whether it be through music, whether it be through live performance, whether it be through, you know, just sitting with your friends and putting yourself out there and putting pen to paper and sharing it with me. A lot of students will send me their work, and not even in a way that they want me to critique it, but it's almost their way of having a voice and saying, you know what, this is my opinion on this. And I'm in a very privileged position where I get to read stuff like that. I'm going off on a tangent here. I really like when, you know, you watch the adverts, and what is it, is it the bank advertisements that have got the spoken word stuff? Yeah.
Do you mean the Nationwide ones?
No, but there's a lot of them that's kind of jumped in on that as well, and it's fantastic, and you'll get then students watching it, and it's the idea of it being more performance related, very very dramatic. And I think there's almost a hybridity, isn't there, between that music and poetry. And I know that I'm going over the same topics again, but I don't know if there is a short answer to that question. If a student comes to me and thinks, right, this is what I'm into, this is what I like, I think I'd probably talk to them about it on many layers, whether it be recommending the books that I like, finding out a little bit about them. Obviously, I'm probably biased when I read the Yorkshire poets that I really enjoy. And I'm often bringing in my own books from home and sharing, what do you think of that? Or, right, I think that you might like this, turning a page over. And I think if you just keep sharing like that, then you're going in the right direction.
Matt, how did you make it a more permanent full-time style career?
It took a while. I mean, it's strange being a full-time poet, because you have to be sort of like a jack of all trades. But I do a lot of work in schools. I do performances. I do some commissions. I do sell some books. So I earn money in millions of different ways. But in terms of writing poetry itself, like, I'm entirely self-taught. I never went to university. I've never done any like formal poetry degree. I just learned through reading and reading and reading and reading and performing and writing and writing and writing and performing, and just sort of built it up like that, really. And I guess over a period of 10 years, I got enough contacts and enough sources of income to give it a go. I've been full time as a poet for about 5.5 years, I think. But what's important to say about poetry is a lot of people think that it's this like really high sacred art form that you have to be incredibly intelligent to be able to do or understand. And it's just not true at all. Like, if you've got something to say, that's important. And poetry can be a way for you to say it. It doesn't matter if it doesn't rhyme, if there's no structure. It's just express yourself and have faith in using your voice in whatever way you want. And like, if you've expressed something, that is valid, and therefore it's important and it's good poetry. And people, oh, I can't write poetry, I can't do that. You can, like, you absolutely can. And it's so important for young people to be heard. And I think poetry can be the best way to do that, definitely.
Thank you very much to both Matt Abbott and Carey Marshall. You've been listening to The King's Talks.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just start recording them. That one.